Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Rich Hudson.
Good afternoon.
And Jules Gill.
Hello, everyone.
These people who surround me have played all the lovely, lovely games that are coming out in the next few months and into 2020, but we don't have every single one of them being covered today. You guys can come back on Wednesday where we're going to do another sort of EGX roundup, or U2R.
Yep.
Or we'll see. We'll sort out some sort of combination of hosts for that thing.
Sure.
Where you can run down everything that you played. But I just thought we would sort of do the cream of the crop initially.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Highlight some different things.
I mean, we are fresh off the back of this. I mean, we literally wrapped up yesterday and we're back in recording this today, and I'm absolutely knackered, mate. I've been done in. My feet are killing me. I feel like I've aged about 20 years, and I was already bold and old to begin
you
with.
Lost so your beard.
I feel like I've died.
It's been a long weekend, but it's been one of the best weekends I think I've ever had out at an event or just not sitting on my ass doing nothing. It's been absolutely brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Before we begin as well, I just want to give a massive thank you to anyone who took the time out of their day to come find us and say hi. It truly, truly means a lot to us when you come out and say that, because supporting the channel is fantastic, and being able to see you and know that we're doing the right things sometimes is always great. So thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. This will be going out on the main What Culture channel as well. So you can go What Culture Gaming channel. You can go find the What Culture Gaming podcast channel as well. We're going to be experimenting with some different shows going up on the main channel alongside the podcast stuff. But the podcast channel is where like every other episode will go if it doesn't end up on the main channel.
Well, don't tease me, Scott. Tell me what we're coming up. Or is that the secret?
Julian. Mm-hmm. See, the thing is, we've got Call of Duty on Friday, so we're going to do a big old breakdown of that.
I've got to love a good codcast.
Yes,
we do like podcast. Our podcasts.
Fishcast, what are you going to say?
No, I was just going to say, is it? I didn't realise that one of the biggest games franchises of the year was having another sequel that came out this Friday.
This one looks really good.
Yeah, no,
I'm excited.
You guys have your EGX thing potentially on Wednesday. We're going to do something on jump scares. We've got a whole load of stuff planned, Jules.
You know what? If I was a subscriber listening to this right now, I'd be like, hot dang. Hot diggity dog.
Hot dang. Good content.
Give it all you got. So the in terms of the cream of the crop of the stuff that you guys play, I'm going to open with Marvel's The Avengers. Jules, you played this thing.
Now, here's a little secret thing. I'm not. I think we're technically allowed to say what we got up to.
You've already said on every other EGX video we shot already.
I didn't sign an embargo.
You didn't sign anything. Plus public were there as well.
Exactly. Yeah. So what happened is that when we were at EGX, there was actually two demos that were going on, and a lot of people only got to play one, which was A Day, which is seeing the Avengers storming across this massive bridge because it's being destroyed by a shadowy corporation figure we don't know. There's been some sort of like big explosion. Yes, all the trailers have been covering this. Uh-huh. But Rachel and I were lucky enough, because of our lovely contact at Square Enix, to go up and do a behind closed doors playthrough where we got to play as Kamala Khan, Miss Who's. Yeah, so the best thing about this is that it was a gameplay-centric enemy wave demo.
Right.
Inside what's known as a harm room. It's kind of like the Professor Xavier's X-Men training room that they've got there. But you could simulate all these different environments.
A harm room.
Yeah, yeah. And as
what culture officers?
And as Kamala Khan, you got to take on wave after wave of all of these bad guys, and it was brilliant to not only get a sort of hands-on with how she's going to play, because she's actually going to be the driving force of the game's narrative. She's going to be one that's actually going to be collecting all of the Avengers back together after the events of A-Day.
Gotta catch them all.
Indeed.
So if you don't know who Kamala Khan is, she's Ms. Marvel, who is like the stand-in kind of thing alongside Captain Marvel or whatever. But Ms. Marvel's main power is embiggening. She can go massive. She can have big fists and legs and everything else.
She dropped in 2013 and then became sort of like a global superstar in 2014. scene around that time, and has one of the most popular recent Marvel characters. So it made perfect sense for her to be included in this game. And playing as her was hilarious fun because the Embiggen is a fantastic move that does literally like triple her size. But as every character's got a ranged attack, so you've got like, you know, Iron Man puts out his repulsor blast and the Hulk does his thunderclap stuff. With her one, she pulls her hand back because her powers are kind of like Mr. Fantastic, where she's like rubbery and can obviously like change the shape of her fists and feet. Mm-hmm. And she does a massive palm smash that will like literally crush people against wall. And when she brings back her hand, she like does that. So it's like shaking her. She's like, ooh, like that sort of thing. It was so fun to play as her. And I managed to get through, I was the only one of our little demo group that managed to get through all 15
ways. Did you get a little t-shirt?
I didn't get a little t-shirt, but I got Scott Amos, the head of Crystal Dynamics, saying
you
that
got
was...
him?
Yeah, I didn't get him in my pocket, obviously. No, unfortunately not. He just went, oh, well done. That's really good. I was like, oh, there we go.
He seems genuinely surprised that someone got through the whole demo.
By the way, I just have to say that Scott Amos is such a nice man.
Okay.
Like, he is so passionate about this project. He was sitting down there and you could tell that he had like a childish glee telling us how much he was invested in this project, because they seem to be ticking all of the right boxes. In this day and age, what's a death sentence? Sending a game out with loot boxes or microtransactions.
Or just being unfinished.
And he flatly just said, like, there will be no paid for loot gambling, any sort of systems like that. If you want to buy cosmetics that do not affect the gameplay at all, you have the option to buy them on the storefront with real money. We're not going to do with this in-game coin, whatever it is. You just buy it with real money and it will just change the costume of your character. All of the heroes and all of the maps that will be coming out afterwards will be free. That is his party line that he said there.
Okay.
Whether or not that is subject to change would be very strange at this point in time, but he was happy to say that. So, and it just helps that the game plays really well.
Yeah. I mean, because did you get a chance to play the A-Day stuff as well?
We didn't get a chance to play the A-Day stuff because of the fact that this, we were told, was the more comprehensive version of it. And we did actually watch a load of people playing it, and I've seen the trailer of the full playthrough as well.
Because I think they have, that's the characters that they've confirmed so far. But, like, obviously, the way that they've sort of mentioned the games as a service type stuff, they'll be plugging different characters into the online modes and stuff. But, like, when the way that you played as Kamala, did she seem like she had enough depth to warrant, like, hours worth of
time? Unbelievably so. Because of the fact that we got to see a story trailer as well, which actually shows her bringing together, she's talking to Iron Man, she's talking to Bruce Banner. Mm-hmm. They're basically all dealing with massive grief at what happened, the events of A-Day, because they all in some part were responsible for what happened. But then she then starts to uncover maybe there's a shadowy corporation going on, or there's something isn't quite what it seems. Mm-hmm. And so that's what brings people, the Avengers, back together to unite to try and basically just put the world right. Because Scott was very, very clear by saying that AIM, which are the new sort of tech corporation that have risen up in the Avengers' absence, they are not the bad guys in the sense that they are like the Machiavellian mustache-twirling evil guys. But what they do is they just represent the idea of bringing humanity together through technology and unity, possibly to a little bit of an extreme.
Okay.
So that was an interesting thing. He's saying there's no black or white. Every character here is humanized. Every single story that is going to be told is going to be about them dealing with real human situations. Like he used PTSD. He used mental health as another thing as well. So if he deals with this correctly, then they're going to have some of the possibly most relevant game on the market at the moment, because it's something that a load of people love. Avengers are so popular. But applying it to situations that are huge at the moment and need discussion. So I'm really keen on this game. I was warm on it, and now I'm hot on it. I'm sizzling.
Considering like how mature Spider-Man felt, like the different sort of themes that thing tackled, and like just the way the overall look of it, like Marvel's The Avengers, the Square Enix one, it just looks gorgeous anyway on a rendering side. Rich, you played some Doom Eternal, and you've recovered enough to talk about it.
I don't think I have. I really don't think I have. That was my most anticipated thing to go and play at EGX this weekend, and getting a good honestly about half an hour. I got a bit of extra time compared to the standard amount of demo that people got. I was, you know, everything that I wanted it to be was there. I was still blown away by just how good it was. They've done enough to change up things. They've added bits and bobs into the standard gameplay formula we know from Doom 2016, but they've not added in so much that it feels completely different, because that has happened with game sequels at time to time, that they just they bolt too many more things onto this thing. Oh, this needs to be different enough to warrant it being a sequel. And people are just like, well, that's too different now.
You said they changed things to do with like the pickups. You can make different things.
Yes, so they've just sort of refined find some of the mechanics they introduced with the glory kills, because glory kills were new to the Doom series come 2016. Back then, if you used a glory kill, you would gain health from killed demons. If you used the chainsaw, you would replenish basically all the ammo depending on the size of the demon you would chop up.
Right.
But armor was one of the things that wasn't at all like replenishable outside of just finding drops on the floor. But now the Doomslayer's got his new armor. He's showing a bit more skin this time. I think it must be warmer.
Kinky.
Must be a bit hotter
in Doom 3. It'll probably have like a midriff as well.
have his
little belly out.
Yeah. But now he's got like an over-shoulder grenade launcher, which replaces actually just throwing a grenade like you did in 2016, but also houses a flamethrower. So if you set any demons on fire, they'll just slowly start spitting out armor chunks as well.
Right.
So you can replenish your sort of health and stuff that way. And they definitely didn't just like bolt this on top. Mm. They took this replenishing side of things and they put it more into practice, because going through the chunk of, because we basically played one big level but split into like three or four separate bits, and there was just like, okay, sometime later, it literally would say sometime later, here's what you're doing now,
right.
Sometime later, here's what you're doing now. But they didn't actually give you as much ammo in the grand scheme of things, because I basically live on the combat shotgun with Doom, and I ran out of ammo on it like almost straight away all the time, because they expect you to use everything in your arsenal, which is still a pretty, you know, Doom guy can fit like eight weapons up his bum, wherever on earth he keeps them, plus the grenades, plus this chainsaw, plus the flamethrower, and of course his glory kills, and just standard punching, and the blood punch you get from getting lots of glory kills. And they expect you to use every single aspect of that in your fight against the demons.
Right.
So it feels like there's a lot more depth to it in the way that you do need to play. But I went into it still with like Doom 2016 hot in my mind, because it wasn't that long ago since I last replayed it, and I still got stuck into it more and more. And as time has gone on after the demo, which of course I have not stopped thinking about since I played it, I'm thinking about, okay, I can see how I need to adapt the gameplay that I know well from 2016, however many hours I put into 2016, and taking it into Eternal. But yeah, it was like everything that I wanted and more.
It was
fast. It was bloody. It was the music that we heard from Mick Gordon again.
Oh, it's amazing.
Got to hear some new music.
Yeah.
Is that like a core main theme? Because like Rip and Tear kind of became known as the Doom theme.
In that scenario, we can't really tell.
It's just bouncy,
we
funky,
just got
genty
some
stuff.
Yeah,
it's heavier.
It was all heavy.
It's heavier than the first stuff.
Still super heavy.
Yes.
Yeah. But as for whether we'll get like, I mean, you know, they'll have to do some kind of like successor to Rip and Tear and some kind of successor to BFG Division, and I'm sure we will have them. There's a chance we might have heard them during the demo.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Right.
But all we heard was Mick Gordon do background music. So
what was the thing that made you feel like it was heavier? Is it just like more layered up?
There was a bit where you're watching this BFG 1 million or
BFG 10,000.
10,000, who's the massive sentry gun that's literally a planet killer. It was charging up, and in the, as the lift is going down, the music was fading out, but just as the lift stopped and started fade back in, it started going like, it sounded like a chainsaw being revved. It's like...
in Doom 2016, the main menu theme uses a chainsaw sound effect put through a synthesizer for his instrument, so the actual use of chainsaws is a thing in the Doom soundtrack.
That's beautiful, because I remember in the original one, there was that big moment where the music stopped and he cocks the shotgun.
Right,
and
it's like the title sequence.
I love that they've taken that forward. Like,
they're going to have to do something like that again with the opening to Eternal. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, we've been put into stasis by Samuel Hayden. That's where we are.
Because
all of our gameplay was on Phobos and then into Mars and then into Hell.
Right,
so
but
we haven't done any Earth stuff yet.
The new abilities like the wall climbing and the double dashing and the stuff like that, and all of those other things, they create a... it's allowed the developers to really go crazy with the level design. Mm. We're noticing so much more verticality and so much more platforming sections.
It's literally a playground.
Yeah, you were like running along, jumping down to this like platform that was only like as big as the Doom Slayer itself, that's literally hovering or dropping slowly into the Earth, into the Mars's atmosphere, which has been split open.
Right.
And you've got like all of these flying demons all coming all around you, and you're then jumping up in the air and like trying to use the hook shot on them. It's
but like reliably, you don't feel like you're going to fall in.
No, not at all. No. I felt like I was in control 100% of the time. And if I died, I wasn't just like, damn. I was still like, that was fun.
You get your double jump, you get your two dashes, and you get your wall climbing and stuff like that. But you can tell that they've played it with more verticality because they've added in more flying demons. Because in 2016, you had the Kaka demon, and you had the I can't remember what they're called, but the skulls that scream at you and then charge at you.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And now you've got the I knew this name before, but it looks like a Kaka demon, but it's brown and has arms.
Yeah,
and it reaches into its mouth to throw things at you. And there are also these like more winged demons as well, flying around. They like hover in the air. They're kind of of like the Reapers, the one with the rocket launchers on their shoulders.
Yeah, cool.
Kind of similar to how they jump in the air and float. They really play up on the verticality a lot more. And the final, in the last third of the demo was this final battle, and it was hard.
Okay.
It was really
hard. Because you said you were one of the only people who got through it.
I got all the way through it.
Yeah. Culture Gaming elite gamers.
I got all the way through, but they drop like two of these guys on you, and just running around in circles in this literally this massive playground. It's similar to like later on in 2016. There were those levels with like almost like underpasses underneath the map where you could find more pickups. It's like more and more of that, but then the topmost layer, and then another layer on top, and you've got the monkey bars to swing around on. You're launching yourself in the air using the hook shot underneath the super shotgun was also so absolutely fun.
I was going to ask you about that, because it's like, does that let you close the distance on something, or you're bringing stuff?
No, you close the distance on it. Right, which means that you could be running around at the outset of an arena, you could jump off, and then just at the last second pull yourself back in, or even go around.
Like when you've got like, for example, like a Kakademon out in the distance, and it's like a super shotgun hasn't got the range for it, but I can just pull myself towards it,
and then at the last second,
it's almost like reverse Roadhog in Overwatch when he uses his hook shot to pull somebody towards him and gets a point blank shot with his shotgun. It's basically that, except the Doomslayer is pulling himself towards the demons.
Which is great, because I feel like that in one action summarizes the Doomslayer better than anything else, because it's not, he doesn't want to bring the enemies closer to him. He wants to he will come to you.
But Eternal was my personal highlight of the show. It has completely tided me over to March 2020. Mm-hmm. I will happily wait another 6 months for this game, because even that little bit we played, it's like, if I get this, and I remember it saying apparently the campaign's like 50 hours.
Yeah, mad.
And it's like,
mad.
If I get 50 hours of that on just a single playthrough, I'm gonna be
like actually physically exhausted at the end of it.
I'll be a skeleton by the end of it. I'll be gone.
One quick thing to notice as well is that the PCs that we were playing on, they ran the game so smoothly. I know that they were top of the line, but the fact is that when Rich is saying that we jumped forward in the levels, it was like, here's the loading screen, skip. Here's the loading screen, skip. You were instantaneous loading each and every time.
Uh-huh. Yeah, one of the things in the PC space with Doom is it's a really good game for benchmarking PCs, because with id and their prowess, since 93, it was before 93 they were doing PC games, they are so good at optimizing games. People have I've watched YouTubers take a potato PC, stick a relatively new budget GPU into it, like a 2019 GPU, and it can run Doom at like 90 FPS. And this was like a Dell workstation from 2010. You could just bung this in, and it can run Doom perfectly fine. So it's like, if you've got a potato of a PC, there's a good chance that you'll be able to run 2016 or Doom Eternal pretty damn well. I was asking about whether we'd have like RTX support on launch and stuff like that, but we were must have been playing at least 144 frames per second.
It was so good, it was just liquid butter gaming. Beautiful game.
It sounds like they've completely doubled down on the speed and the anarchic. Yeah. Like, it's so anarchic, and it's just like the thing that everyone loved about the reboot in 2016 was that feel of like aggression and just not stopping at all.
So much more aggressive. Like even just the actions that the Doomslayer have, even the difference in the glory kills. Mm. They're so much more disgusting at times.
Good. Yeah. Very good.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Everything you liked about 2016 has been pumped full of steroids and made sillier and bloodier and more brilliant. And I'm so excited.
Did you guys wield the big energy sword that we've seen? Or
no? No. Okay. Melee
I think that's saved. I think that is actually a chunk that takes place that we skipped.
Ooh.
Because I was watching some of the gameplay earlier today from QuakeCon, and we played the beginning like a bit earlier on in that demo, and then we played a bit later on.
Right.
So yeah. I'm guessing this boss fight when he pulls out the hilt, mm-hmm. and he pulls the sword out, is something that happens in between two of the chunks we
have. I don't know if we'll ever get this off the ground, but we should do the best energy swords in gaming. Because you can have lightsabers, but you can have the Halo energy sword, the Doom 2 energy sword.
Yeah.
Just give me energy blades, left, right, and center.
But yeah.
Jules, you play the Final Fantasy VII Remake. Is it as good as my childhood thinks it is?
Right, okay. So let's just be very, very clear from the off. This is a very, very different game. It's fantastic.
Good.
I enjoyed it so, so much. I did not get nearly enough time with this game as I would have liked to.
Okay.
They were very stringent about the how long you got on it. But
dragged you away kicking.
Admittedly, the queues were absolutely ridiculous.
Oh, they'd be insane.
They left me wanting more immediately, because of the fact is I went to... You start in the Mako reactor, even though they pronounce it as Mako in this.
It's Mako.
It's Mako.
Come on. Has it got 1K?
Yeah.
It's Mako.
Yeah.
But as soon as you get off the ladder, Barrett just goes, "Oh, there's Mako reactor," and I'm just like, "Oh, boo."
That's the problem with voicing.
Literally unplayable.
So what happened is that you get like 10 minutes to run from the top of the Mako reactor all the way down to where you fight the scorpion boss.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as I got down there, all the way through, I was noticing. I was like, "Oh, okay, fluid movement. The combat looks quite nice as well. I'm allowed to just sort of like attack and move over." And I thought, "Okay, getting vibes of Final Fantasy 15, which I didn't love for its combat, but I thought was a step in an interesting direction."
Mm-hmm.
And then it started like giving the tutorials for like how to do the spells and how to do this. And as I was like able to pause the game and not just like slow down, it's pausing the game. So you can literally play this as
turn-based.
Yeah, if you want to do all of your abilities and stuff off that, then you are more than able to, because you can actually flip between your characters and issue them commands as well,
right.
And then flip back to your main characters to carry on.
Lush.
And Barrett and Cloud play completely differently. So Cloud is obviously right up in their face. He can take a few more hits, and he's also really good at sort of like he can not stun lock, but he can push enemies back each time he hits them,
okay.
Which is quite a nice little feature.
Mm-hmm.
Barrett's great at doing support fire, because if you hold his gun barrel down, he'll do tons of chip damage to them, but they'll stay in place so that the rest of the team can move in or attack him to do other stuff. Because this isn't a game that says if you're casting a missile launcher barrage that it's going to hit you no matter what, because I hate games that give you the illusion that you can dodge but you're not actually able to.
Mm-hmm.
In this one, for example, the scorpion boss fires out a million missiles. If you aren't dodging them, then you won't get hit, you won't take any damage.
Right, cool,
and I
good.
Love that, because it rewards you for playing well as being tactical.
That was the biggest problem I had with 15, because it just felt like you were having like an animation war, and it was just sort of like, well, it's the illusion of combat.
I remember times when I'd have enemies that were attacking me maybe three foot away because I dashed away, but because because the animation had started next to my character, I still took the damage. I was like, oh, right.
So
okay.
In 7, in terms of being hands on with it, like, is it do you have light and heavy attacks, and does it respond button by button, or is it, are you holding it or in?
It's no, you're not holding buttons. You are like attacking. Yeah, you are attacking. You can chain together some combos as well, which is great. I mean, for Barrett, for example, if you hold down the square button to attack, he'll do a round of fire, and then he'll finish with a charge burst, which does extra damage as well. Every single person's got different abilities with their spells, and Barrett can fire a stunning concussion blast.
Okay.
You've got the Braver for Cloud, where he stuns enemies, but it does like extra damage to those around him and stuff like that.
I was going to say, how does it handle the limit break stuff? Do you get to do any limits?
Because this was a tutorial, it basically built the limit break up to a certain point, and then it allowed you to use it at a certain point. But in the game, you could see that it was like the more attacks you were doing, the quicker your ATB gauge was filling up. So therefore, as Barrett, who was better at dealing with the Scorpion boss than Cloud because he has the thunder magic, you stand back, shoot the boss for ages because then you will charge your ATB gauge really quickly. Then you do that, but you keep Cloud right up next to it so that it doesn't go and attack Barrett. And it's really, you actually can see forward thinking, there's going to be a lot of very tactical battles. Like you're going to really need to think about where the placement of your characters are and keep telling them to do certain things or moving them into certain places.
In the Scorpion battle, did it raise its tail at any point?
It did raise its tail.
Tell you to actually not attack it when its tail's raised?
Nope.
What a legendary mistranslation.
It didn't tell us to not attack, but what it did say was you might want to hide behind the rubble that conveniently falls in place. And it does, if I did a test of what happens if you do get hit. It ruins you. I was just like, ooh, okay, fair enough. But I had so much fun playing it. The only problem that I have with this is that I worry that corners are going to be cut with the story to make it only focus on the action side of the game, because we have seen nothing about how it's going to be in the downtime. We've only been focusing on the combat. Everyone's been doing that.
Yeah.
I love the fact that they put in the stagger thing from Final Fantasy 13, whereas if you do enough damage to it, it will enter a stagger animation,
kind of,
and they'll fall to the floor, and you can do like attack for triple damage or whatever like that is. But I don't like the way that the episodic stuff's feeling at the moment. I'm not sure. They keep trying to sell us on the fact that it's going to be, each one of these is going to be a full 40-hour game, and that's how they're justifying a full price for each one.
I want to believe that they've got
down. That's 120 quid.
Yeah.
Because it's three episodes, isn't it?
That's what it is right now.
But I've ever heard somebody sit over there saying it was going to be 7 episodes. No, I'm not even joking.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Imagine paying 40 quid a time. Over, even 3 is 120.
As someone who's Final Fantasy VII is one of their favourite games of all time, I will pay that money. Oh, but I don't want to, but I will.
But that's my only concern with this.
Because I think the way that they've led with it, obviously they're doing a massive chunk of Midgar, and it looks gorgeous. Like, I mean, a lot of Final Fantasy VII's imagery is that sort of cyberpunk city, and it's like, that's obviously what they would lead with. It is the beginning of the game, but in terms of, they haven't shown anything else. I don't even think they've worked on the rest of the game yet.
No.
They've kind of rejigged Sephiroth's place in it. Like, he's more visualised as part of, like, in Cloud Psyche.
Well, that actually happened in the middle of the fight. In the middle of the battle with the Scorpion, or maybe just before, he has, like, a pang of, like, a memory, and he sees a black feather falling down, and then just as it hits the ground, that's when the Scorpion boss attacks. So it's kind of like much more on the nose than I guess the other game was.
Because I played through Final Fantasy VII this year, and like that thing, I adore Final Fantasy VII, but it is very much the victim of a one-person translation team, and there's a whole bunch of story things in that barely land because they just didn't translate it very well. And so like Cloud's relationship with Sephiroth is a massive deal, and a lot of the fans have picked apart the reality of what the twist was supposed to be. But I think they'll see that way better in this.
I'm just going to put it out there that I feel like there is nothing to stop you from loving both games. Like, I know that a load of people will be out there like, it's not the Final Fantasy I wanted. It's like, you're right, it's not going to be the Final Fantasy that you possibly ideally wanted, which is probably the exact same game but with better graphics.
That's what I thought it was going to be. That's what I wanted it to be, and that's what I thought they were going to do. If you want that, you can go play that on PC. Just swap the character models out.
Yeah, and I mean, this is a remake, not a remaster, I guess. So that's the way to look at it. I mean, everyone was worried about Resident Evil 2 being remade, and now look at us.
It's one of the best games of the year.
Exactly. So I'm hoping to say the same thing further down the line. Just hope that I just worry that they're going to bring the elements of the present into the past, and the episodic content is one of them. I hope that then we're not going to see any more DLC stuff.
They could
and
do
other
with
bits.
Clarifying what it's going to be, like where the cutoff in the story is, and exactly how they're going to roll it out. Because Midgar is a fraction of that game.
Oh yeah,
I mean, a tiny sliver.
Like, if you think about it, it's not even until like the giant snake that you have to fight to get through the canyon that things really start even heating up.
Yeah.
And that is maybe 12 hours into the game.
There's enough content, hashtag content, to make that first episode, all about everything that happens in Midgar, and maybe going to Calm afterwards or whatever. Like, and the, like you said, the first time you see the that giant snake, I forget its name, the Midgar's Olive.
Yeah.
Like the first time you see that, they could totally end on it on that and be like, holy crap, this thing got killed. Or
I personally think they're going to end this first episode with the plate falling.
Oh,
that, and then crushing the crushing the city below. That's probably a good setup point for them to leave. But I do think that we're going to miss everything between that point up until maybe the Grand Canyon, or not Grand Canyon. What's it? Fort Condor.
Fort Condor.
I reckon that all of that will just be cut out because it's just busy work.
I guess obviously it's a shame. In terms of the gameplay, it seems extremely promising.
Yes. Oh yeah, definitely, and it looks great.
Rich, your next thing was Iron Man VR, which probably blew you away.
It did. I have never played VR before in a proper, like, I've just put a mobile phone in a bit of plastic sense. So this was genuinely my first ever VR experience. And to jump in with PSVR especially and play a relatively short demo of Iron Man VR, it has sold me on the whole platform.
Good.
And I've been very tempted by VR a lot recently. There's been a lot of musings about Valve revealing a AAA style VR game, a full on VR game.
It does take
place between Half-Life 1 and 2.
Starring
Alex Vance. Interesting. But I got to play Iron Man VR, and it is literally everything you would expect it to be. You are Tony Stark, you are Iron Man. And it took place outside of his home on the cliffside, as it is in the MCU. And you're just like flying around shooting targets. Basically, it's just like, okay, I've just come home from whatever I was doing. Let's just do some training. Let's just, you know, let's have a cool down as a means of giving you the tutorial. So it was both PS Move controllers, one in each hand, obviously the headset. And it was like, okay, straight away, you need to fly home because you're like a kilometer away.
Right.
And it was like, okay, so put your hands, the way that you held the controller is like the direction of the actual, like, the lollipop, as it were, was like your palm forward. Like parallel with it, basically. And it was like, remember that you're Iron Man, you've got the blasters on your palms. So that's the direction you need to be having your hands facing. So you put your hands down below you and you hold down both triggers behind it and you're like, you've got your hands by your sides like a penguin and you're hovering in midair like Iron Man does.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, now you need to fly towards your house. So tilt your hands forward so that your palms are facing behind you, so you're propelling yourself forward. Mm-hmm. So you flew all the way home, gave it the title sequence, and it was like, I'm flying through the woods, so Interactive Entertainment presents. And you get home, and it's like, cool, here's some triangular targets, and they're all around you.
Right.
And you get a little thing on your UI, because obviously you get the Iron Man UI, it comes in with the helmet, the eyes appear, and then it opens up, and it's like, here you are, you're out in the sea. And it was like, okay, now point at that and shoot it. So, you know, you lift the Move controller up and you can see obviously Iron Man's hand or like a sort of slightly transparent Iron Man hand come up, and you hold down the big button in the middle and it has the charge up noise.
Yeah.
And then the shoot and then the shot.
Like, yeah.
And it was, And it was like, okay, do that and do that. And just think of any point in the MCU when Iron Man is there like shooting and he's just spinning around on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
And you're literally, the first thing you do in that game apart from flying is doing that.
We saw so many people
just going like towards the end of the demo when they'd started feeling comfortable with it, just going pew, 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 pew.
It was pretty, they just rammed it up. It was like, okay, you've shot a load of targets. Now do some flying around, fly through some rings.
Right. Yeah.
Like PS1 Quidditch. Mm-hmm. Go and do that. But again, it's like you have to, you know, position your hands in such a way, you have to use your trajectory because you do get a bit of sway over where you go based on where you're looking. But it is mainly based on where your hands are.
Right.
And it's like, fly around, go through some rings. Okay, now we're going to do the same again, but there's some targets as well. And now we're going to let you loose with the whole playground. It's quite a big space. We're going to give you loads of targets and hoops and now drones who are shooting at you.
Two things. One, can you stop in midair by putting your palms forward? And two, can you do a superhero landing?
No.
Oh.
There was no option to do a superhero landing because we were literally, you're out in the sea. There's just rocks everywhere. But yes, you can put your palms in front of you to stop.
Like, stop.
Because it is pure trajectory. Like, you have complete control over where you move based on where your hands are. Same with the way you were shooting, because eventually your AI Friday, I think it might have been in this, they were like, okay, do some heavier stuff. So they brought out some suit, like bigger drones that take like 3 or 4 hits to shoot. Mm-hmm. And there was one point when I was just kind of really high up in the air and they were both below me. So I was just like double hand shooting downwards. And you get taught how to punch through things. Mm-hmm. And at one point, I flew down to one, and as it was in front of me, it was charging up its shot. I just punched through the middle of it.
Amazing.
Destroyed it.
Amazing.
And it was like, this has sold me. The idea, like the freedom that you get, it doesn't feel, because I kind of thought, oh, it could be very on rails. But no, you're literally flying around free roam as Iron Man, shooting stuff left, right, and center, punching, boosting, And then, amazing. Yes, at the end of it, you do land on your like driveway and you do fly to the point, and then it gets to the... When you get close enough, it triggers an animation that then you do the sort of superhero landing.
Right, okay.
That was all it was. It was only about maybe 10, 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. But that 10, 15 minutes has sold me on PSVR, and now I am looking to buy one.
Amazing.
Sounds like... I mean, yeah, considering that like we haven't had any decent Iron Man games, I remember forcing myself to like the second Iron Man film game, because you could fly around. And yeah. It's not actually good, but I like the idea that you could fly around as Iron Man.
But the reason why this has sold me so quickly is because you have something against your face, mm-hmm. it feels like you are wearing the helmets. When you've got them talking in your ears and you can see the UI like literally right in front of you, it felt so real. And like I said, every time you pulled out your hand to shoot something, it just felt so good.
I never realized how like iconic that noise already is.
Yeah,
like
the fact that you were controlling that, like literally you were aiming with your right. There was a little bit of aim assist, but mm-hmm. it was relatively free roam, because you've got you're using your whole body, you can be as precise as you like to be. Mm-hmm. So I highly recommend giving it a go when it really... I can't remember when it releases, but I'm just like, I need to make sure I have a PSVR by the time this comes out. I've no idea how long it is. But even just that beginning bit was such a good time.
Just got this idea of you as Iron Man's sidekick, where people just going, what's that up in the sky? Oh, it's Iron Man and Rusty Rich.
It's Iron Boy.
But so we'll have more EGX stuff on Wednesday. You guys can go into the rest of the stuff that you played. There's some Dragon Ball Z Kakarot. There's mm-hmm. some Pokemon Sword and Shield. And there's some Cyberpunk 2077, which is more of like a live demo thing that you guys got to watch as opposed to play it. But still, come back for that stuff. We'll put it on the main channel as well. And for now, this has been the World Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Rich Hudson.
Thank you for listening.
I'm Jules Gill.
See you soon.
I'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Think of your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.